Welcome back to Eurobytes. I am not in the studio, obviously, on location at the LANPAC conference for the Department of War as a Pentagon correspondent, but I had a chance to get in touch with Christian, our Eurobytes, I would say, chief, and tell us what's going on in Europe, Christian. I'm really curious about Mr. Starmer. He said this morning he was a gooner or something. What the hell does that mean?
I mean, it's sometimes hard to tell with Keir Starmer what he actually means. I mean, his favorite gaffe, I think 2 years ago when he spoke about the hostages in Gaza, and he spoke to them, he referred to them as sausages. So, you know, I'm not quite sure what he meant with goon. But I mean, the current situation with Keir Starmer, and so he's one of my favorite politicians in the sense it's so comical. It's I mean, when he's gone, I'll truly be sad because it's just comedy gold. And to give you an example, I mean, a very talented UK comedian, one of the few guys on the right that we have. Actually, there's a number of them, but a guy who reached a certain prominence called Nick Dixon, he kind of quipped the other day, look, after the nuclear fallout, it's just going to be a bunch of cockroaches and Keir Starmer. And Keir Starmer will say amongst the cockroaches, I will not resign. I will not resign. And I mean, that I have rarely seen somebody like Keir Starmer. You know, otherwise a very uncharismatic politician, a very bland rhetorician. But there is one thing he has, it's staying power. I mean, interesting enough, this was the government of, first of all, the many U-turns. He tried to slap massive inheritance taxes on the British farmers, meaning every time you pass on the farm to your son, you will need to sell part of the farm because, you know, the inheritance taxes were so high. Fortunately, he U-turned on that after there was a big grassroots uprise against it, and the farmers' union very skillfully dragged in Jeremy Clarkson. You guys might remember Jeremy Clarkson as the very talented car guy from Top Gear, and he's bought a farm. He has got a fantastic series, I recommend it to every conservative, called Clarkson's Farm, and he shines a light on the tough life of the farmers. And he and the British Farmers Union ran a very talented campaign, and they got Keir Starmer to U-turn. But he U-turned on a couple of other issues, be that removing the fuel allowance for the senior citizens, and a lot more. So it is a very unpopular government, very unpopular with the far left of Labour, because when Keir Starmer came into power, he removed Jeremy Corbyn, who was an orthodox leftist, if not an outright Marxist. The far left hates him. The what is left of a more conservative kind of blue dog Democrat Labour doesn't like him either. Interesting enough, he has lost the working class at the very latest since lecturing one of the towns where there was a bit of a riot after the killing of three young girls at the hand of a migrant. And he then talked down to the far right and all these thugs and brought down the hammer of the law and bringing down the hammer of the law on a bunch of angry working class people that in their neighborhood had three, in their community had three girls slain, whilst thousands of people who were involved in the grooming gang scandal, i.e. the decade-long industrial-sized rape of British girls, where the British state did nothing, where Keir Starmer voted against a more in-depth investigation, but that prime minister brought down the hammer on them. But now he's clinging on to dear life. And actually, the whole thing, as so many things right now in world politics, is related to the Epstein scandal. Remember, we've mentioned that on Eurobytes before. One of the dark horses of British politics is a guy called Peter Mandelson. Now, what you need to know about Peter Mandelson, he used to be called the Dark Lord. You always thought Tony Blair was the Dark Lord. He too is a Dark Lord, but the Dark Lord's Dark Lord is Peter Mandelson. Peter Mandelson had been fired twice by Tony Blair for various scandals, typically involving financial irregularities. He had been then fired by Tony Blair's successor, Gordon Brown. Now,
I watched John Wick last night, and the take was, he's not the boogeyman, he's the man you want to kill the boogeyman. So this is Mandelson, right?
Yes, that indeed is Peter Mandelson. No, Peter Mandelson, it turned out a while ago, rumors surfaced that Keir Starmer has made him ambassador to the United States, i.e. the same guy who was fired by three times by two different prime ministers before Keir Starmer. Keir Starmer made him ambassador to the United States. It turned out that he made him ambassador to the United States when all the allegations about Mandelson's inappropriate relationships to Epstein were already known, and people already went for Keir Starmer's head then. He survived that, as so many challenges to his leadership. Now, about 4 or 5 weeks ago, it turned out that Keir Starmer had not just heard, oh, you know, yes, I heard there were these relations to that guy who was a known pedophile or pederast, Epstein, but I didn't fully appreciate. Now it turned out, actually, a lot of the UK's security agencies, MI6, GCHQ, and so, warned Keir Starmer, do not do the vetting of Mandelson. The whole thing with the relationship with this Jeffrey Epstein guy is very inappropriate. It seems to go much deeper. Do not vet him. Nonetheless, Keir Starmer decided to go ahead with that.
It's almost like he's working for somebody else, yes. Zelensky, and go down the list.
It is really interesting. I mean, in terms of, look, there is a guy who had been fired three times. Your security services warn you, do not, for your own political sake, do not use that man. There is a lot of tight relationships with Jeffrey Epstein. It turned out that that Mandelson was in close coordination with Epstein, and, for instance, called him at the time when Gordon Brown did one of the worst deals in the history of financial markets, when he sold the Brown bottom, meaning he sold a couple of hundred metric tons of UK gold at the absolute bottom of the market. So if you bought gold then at that price, you'd be on a good ride. Turns out when Mandelson learned about the sell of this gold price, first thing he did, he called Epstein. But nonetheless, you're correct. You're kind of wondering, a guy who was fired three times, but nonetheless rehired and rehired by three different prime ministers, and having these known Epstein connections, somehow they find it appropriate to hand the most important, arguably the most important ambassadorship that the UK has to offer to that man. And yes, indeed, it makes you wonder, what has he got over them, or what has he got connections to for them to do that? And Todd, you kind of hinted at something, who is really their boss? It turned out, and one of the things that makes Keir Starmer almost, well, likably autistic or unlikably autistic, is he was recently asked, a year or two ago, well, if you had to pick between the UK and Davos, what would you pick? And he said Davos, i.e. Davos being a stand-in for the WEF. Now I've talked about why Keir Starmer actually should have stepped down twice. Twice people seem to know about him having made Mandelson ambassador to the United States. And first he said he only had a vague idea. Yeah, I shouldn't have done that. Then actually turns out he knew quite a bit through his spin doctor, a guy called Morgan McSweeney, under the bus. He survived that. But now, this past week, there have been various elections in the United Kingdom. The parliamentary elections for the regional parliament in Scotland, the regional parliament in Wales, and the local councils in England. And the result of these elections were an absolute annihilation of Labour, a further diminishment of the so-called Conservative Tories, and a triumph of Reform UK, Nigel Farage's party. Interesting enough, also a triumph of the guy who was ignominiously bullied out of Nigel Farage's party and slandered and everything, Rupert Lowe. Rupert Lowe, by the way, is the favorite by Elon Musk. Elon Musk had a conversation with Nigel Farage, said, no, that's not the guy to bring about change, but he very much liked the looks of Rupert Lowe. And Rupert Lowe's party only launched in one district, and they won 10 out of 10 seats that were available there. I mean, we're taking 100%. So this is really, really good in terms of showing the strategy. He had a party called Great Yarmouth, which is also the parliamentary district where Rupert Lowe is from. And he founded the party Great Yarmouth.
Every day your data is being tracked, collected, and sold, often without you even realizing it. Big tech companies control your devices, your apps, and the information you share. From your messages to your browsing habits, everything is being monitored and stored. Over time, we've traded privacy for convenience, and most people don't even question it. But what if you could take that control back? That's where Mark 37 comes in. Mark 37 provides privacy-focused phones, laptops, and tablets designed to give you full control over your digital life. With secure systems, expert support, and simple tools, they make it easier to step away from constant tracking and data collection. Because privacy isn't just a feature, it's a fundamental choice. It's about protecting your data, your freedom, and your future. Take back control of your digital life with Mark 37.
By the way, let me just highlight, you saw the ad for mark37.com/CDM. And by the way, I wanted to say I'm starting my journey with Sean. I'm going to be getting a Ghost phone and then upgrading to a Ghost computer soon, because I am going to unplug for the Matrix, and you can follow me along on my journey. So mark37.com/CDM is where you want to go to do that. Find the webinar, sign up for the webinar, and learn everything you need to know to get started. And then you can also sign up for a free 30-minute consultation on privacy there at mark37.com/CDM. But I'm looking forward to it, and I have been worried about privacy for some time. So I'm going to be taking the plunge and changing my life and unplugging from the Matrix, and I'm really looking forward to it. So maybe you can join me.
Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
And which is an offshoot of his party called Restore. And I think it shows to a lot of conservative movements in the United States and Europe how you do it. You go local first, you build up a fantastic grassroots movement, you prioritize local issues over national issues. Nonetheless, you have ties to a good national movement. Now, tying it back to our great Prime Minister Keir Starmer, not only all the scandals that he survived around Epstein, now he obviously had done something that is more unforgivable in politics than having proximity to known pedophiles, which is losing elections badly. And he had a couple of parliamentarians coming out of the woodworks, a couple of ministers resigning, but he stays on his chair. And suddenly starts talking about bringing back digital ID, which was something that he had U-turned on before. So,
funny,
yeah.
Funny, the real agenda comes out.
The real agenda comes
out. Yeah.
Absolutely. And interesting enough, I guess, Todd, you mentioned Angela Merkel rearing her ugly face in the background. You mentioned Ukraine. The segue from Keir Starmer to Angela Merkel. Keir Starmer, the only thing I ever agreed with Keir Starmer on was not participating in the military adventurism in Iran. He said, no, this is not the UK's fight. So far, so good. You could say, okay, that's good. Anti-war, UK first. We've got enough stuff to actually clean up at home, rebuild the military, rather than getting into military adventurisms against Iran. But no. When he said Iran is not our war, it means Ukraine is our war. And I think within Europe, the United Kingdom, even ahead of Germany, is the biggest contributor towards the budget of Ukraine and towards the military budget of Ukraine.
It's an MI6 project, obviously.
Yes. And I mean, it does make you wonder. Now, from their segueing to Ukraine's or to Russia's biggest... One of the biggest antagonists of Russia in Europe, Angela Merkel, our former chancellor, who reared her ugly head again in the background, because right now her party, the CDU, is not doing well. It has done poorly in a number of elections. The AfD now is officially the strongest party, something that nobody thought possible just a year ago. And Angela Merkel has reared her head. She has ruled out becoming chancellor again. I don't think anybody would vote for her other than a couple of hardcore people who still vote for Friedrich Merz. but she suddenly is brought in on board as the peace envoy, or at least floating her as the envoy to bring about peace in Ukraine. Now, what you need to know, what Angela Merkel has been doing for years, she kept antagonizing Russia, she kept villainizing Russia, at the same time with her energy policy, increasing the dependency on Russia, you know, closing down nuclear power plants, talking net zero, at the same time calling Putin a dictator, likening Putin with Hitler, and so forth and so forth, at the same time increasing the dependency on Russia. So, and interesting enough, I think it was her who kind of admitted that all the peace process, all the peace talks that were meant to avert a couple of years ago, prior to the outbreak of the Ukraine war, I think the Minsk Accords or so, where Russia was assured, no, Ukraine wasn't going to be admitted into NATO, and no, there is no aggressive NATO strategy. She said, no, look, this was all to buy time for Ukraine. So, I mean, time and again, you wonder, like, why we keep floating bad faith actors in Russia's face. And at the same time, Germany, one of Merz's last actions was announcing a major drone partnership between Germany and Ukraine. And Ukraine is taking a leaf out of the U.S. and Israeli playbook. If you can't defeat the enemy militarily, you just bomb civilian infrastructure and oil infrastructure, and that's what's happening. And having Angela Merkel back in the conversation is not.
Well, it's a way to not achieve peace. It's appointing a peace envoy that won't go for peace, right? I mean, so that seems to be the strategy. Where is this coming from? England or from Germany, or both, or above?
Well, I mean, whenever it comes to Germany, remember, I mean, I still maintain that Germany is not a sovereign country. I mean, as shown by the fact, well, that A, we had our most important pipeline blown up, most likely by an ally. And interesting enough, so a fully sovereign country, when your pipeline, your most important pipeline, the Nord Stream 2 pipeline with Russia. So if the rumors were true, that it was either the United States in cahoots with Norway and the UK that blew up the pipelines, a truly sovereign country would say, look, you attacked us, we're part of the same alliance with you, we're going to leave the alliance. Or yes, the German media floated the story of, you know, who it was? It was a bunch of Ukrainians, with a sailing boat. And it was one of Ukraine's best deep divers, which, I mean, ask any Navy SEAL who says, look, it's still 60 meters deep, it's non-trivial, you need a mothership, you need quite a bit of infrastructure to pull that off. So a bunch of rogue Ukrainian divers with explosives wouldn't pull it off. But even if you believe the story, and the German security services and the German establishment pretends like they buy the story, as a sovereign country, you would cut off the aid, saying, okay, well, look, you just admitted to us it was a bunch of rogue people from your side, you must have known about it, hence we no longer support you. So I take Germany out of the equation of being an actual sovereign here. I mean, it brings me to the UK. And with the UK, you need to look historically. And the UK establishment seemed to have always a hate on for Russia, a genuine hate on for Russia. I mean, one of the the United Kingdom, Great Britain at the time, fought a war together with France and Turkey against Russia in 1853, 56, something along those lines, the Crimean War, where essentially Russia was about to take a bunch of areas in Europe that had been conquered by the Turks hundreds of years ago. The Russians even had planned to conquer the Bosporus, you know, that small choke point that Turkey nowadays controls via Istanbul. Russia wanted to take it, but the Brits stopped that. So for whatever reason, the UK political establishment is out for Russia, has been doing that forever and a day. I mean, it makes you wonder what the greater geostrategic play is here.
I tend to think it's much more darker. It has to do, I mean, it's obviously against Christianity in any form. We're reporting on this all over the world. I think that's a big part of it. Obviously, there's some desire for the minerals, for the natural resources, for control of the area, for the farmland. But at the end, it's they're killing a lot of birds with one war.
Oh yeah,
if you will, in my
opinion. You have one Europe's one resurgent Orthodox power. You've got another Christian country, and you've got arguably the world's most valuable farmland. I mean,
yes,
much of the Middle East, including Lebanon, which you just visited, live off Ukrainian grain. And if you get your hands on that particular region, I guess it's a very provocative question to ask these days. And you don't have to be Dan Bilzerian to kind of ask about a bunch of to point out a couple of commonalities. A lot of the wars these days, with seemingly unrelated wars, be that the war in Nigeria against the Christians, be that the war in Armenia against the Christians, be that what's happening in Lebanon, be that even to a small degree what's happening in Gaza, the one constant is it seems to be hitting Christians first and foremost. By the way, I should point out that even the Azari campaign against Armenia, was it 1 year or was it 2 years ago?
2 years
seemed
ago.
Seemed to have been greatly helped by Israeli drones and Israeli technology. So, I mean, again, I'm...
Well, the Pashinyan, the prime minister of Armenia, over the last 2 days has come out and said, well, you know those ancient lands of Karabakh with the Christian mountainous regions for 2,000 years? Those were never really ours. They weren't Christian. We don't have any claim on that land. Let's just let it go. And he threw the war to Azeris. And so it's obvious he's in the clan with Zelensky, Biden, Mersh, Starmer, Macron, all of them that are just puppets for this globalist empire that's trying to take over the world, in my opinion.
Yeah, so I mean, it's definitely something is going on. And I mean, if you see whether by intent or by result, it is a perfect storm in the making in terms of now the chokehold on the global oil supply and the fertilizer shortage, which will play out terrible for large parts of the world every day that this blockade, whether it's the Iranian version or whether that's the US Navy version of it, every day that blockade goes on, the harvest situation in the rest of the world grows worse, and the importance of Ukrainian farmland massively increases. So, we're definitely seeing an interesting overlap and weird coincidences of seemingly unconnected wars. Yeah, that's for sure.
Totally. All right, Christian, I don't have a lot of time, and I know you don't, but I think that was a fantastic discussion. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Tom. Well, take care and speak to you soon, hopefully with all four of us then in the next episode.
Yeah, I hope so. Anything else you wanted to get out? I kind of cut you off there. Was that
not at the moment. Let's be super laser focused in today's episode, and we'll revisit the fallout of the UK election and what's going on in Germany in the next episode.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.